right, we're back on the lineup, and I'm not joined today by Pete. Instead, I'm joined by Josh Goldman. Josh, you're here in the studio with me.
I'm in the studio in Texas.
This is pretty awesome.
Pretty exciting.
So Josh Goldman, to the listeners of the lineup who are not also listeners of the podcast, Josh Goldman is the famous host or co-host with his wife, Maureen, of the podcast.
Yeah, I would say maybe Maureen is more famous at this point.
Well,
She's gotten the better reviews.
Okay, that's fair. That's
everybody
fair.
Says, why isn't Maureen on this episode?
Bring Maureen on more.
When I had to do my solo episode on the podcast, everybody said, you're going to have to do that again.
We really missed Maureen there.
Yeah, where is she? Can we have her back?
Less Josh, more Maureen.
Yeah. I will say this studio setup is beautiful compared to Maureen and I, as listeners of the podcast know, we sit on our floor.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in a real chair now. This is exciting.
I think my favorite part about the aesthetic of this in-home studio that we have here is, if you look to your right, Josh, we have
it's beautiful.
Some beautiful wall art from our daughter, who on one of her nap times just decided to go crazy with the crayons.
Here's what you can do. Put a couple 2x4s around it.
Yeah.
And then a little placard.
Oh, that's true.
Modern art.
Oh, that's perfect.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then whenever you move someday, you just cut it out of the wall, send it to the Tate Modern or whatever modern art museum.
I think we can just tell people it comes with the house.
That's right. That's right.
Yes, this special edition piece, this comes with the house.
Sorry, it cannot be moved. It is there permanently.
Well, Josh, I'm really excited that you're here with us today. To our listeners, this is actually the first day that Josh and I have ever officially met.
Yes, we've podcasted together. We've texted. We've talked on the phone.
So you've been on this podcast before.
I have, yes.
When it was formerly known as Third. This is the podcast formerly known as Third Strand.
Yes, I think twice I was on this podcast.
Right.
We talked last year about this time about
UVA basketball.
UVA basketball. And then we talked about Tiger Woods.
Yep. That was a fun one.
Yeah.
And that was a two-parter. So I guess this is really the fourth time you've been on the podcast.
Yeah, technically, yeah.
And let's see. So you've been on Vernacular as well.
I have.
And then Sally and I have been on the podcast.
Yes, we've been doing the podcast since June of 2018. So
what do you guys talk about on the podcast?
We talk about anything pop culture. We have three segments we do every week. So little stories from the past week and then a bigger topic. And then we give you some pop culture things you should check out.
Tell us about your latest fun segment on the pod, the podcast.
Yeah. So we developed a new segment. It's a new part of the marquee topic that we'll do from time to time, where Maureen and I take a look at a critically panned movie that we actually enjoy.
Right.
This was inspired by a movie that we watched that got horrible reviews that we'll do at some point. I'm not going to drop it now. The first one we did, though, was about National Treasure.
Which great
was
movie. Great movie. Should not have been critically panned.
Exactly. And
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
It's so great. So we sort of analyze it and tell you why we think you should watch it.
Yeah.
So that's our new little segment. We'll do that from time to time.
I love it.
Thank you.
Well, we talked about the Mighty Ducks, right?
Yeah, we're going to have to do the Mighty Ducks at some point, because that was really critically panned. According to Rotten Tomatoes, for those of you who don't know, that's the aggregate of reviews. That only got 22%.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah. You know, I did recently rewatch it. I'll give you a little teaser when we do that one. It's not the most impressive film, but it is fun to watch.
Yeah,
and I think I have a nostalgia factor for it too.
It's always surprising when the Rotten Tomatoes score doesn't line up with your experience.
Yeah,
because
I've
had several instances where there's a high Rotten Tomatoes score and I watch a movie and just think, what is this?
Yeah.
Who enjoyed this?
Exactly.
Who drove up the audience score? And it's like, I understand when the critic score doesn't quite line up. Like these critics are looking for different things than I am when I sit down to watch a Netflix movie or whatever. But I mean, the audience score, come on.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, where can we find the podcast, Josh?
You can find the podcast wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcast, Anchor. Please come find us. Check us out. We'd love to have you listen.
Cool. Thanks. Well, thanks for being here, Josh.
And thank you for having me.
Josh is in Austin for the first time or second time?
This is the third time I've been in the city. It's the only city in Texas I've ever been to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has every previous time been for South By?
Yes. It's for South By Southwest, down here for work. And, you know, since Zach lives in the area, I thought we should meet up in person.
What's your South By review? Worth it or no?
My South By review is it's expensive.
Yeah.
Not only to attend the festival, but also to stay if you're not from this area. The hotels are exorbitantly expensive. The food is expensive. But it is, you know, if you're into music, if you're into film, if you're into the interactive section, it's worth it at least once.
Sure.
For the networking and sort of the enjoyment level.
Austin
is great.
Yeah. What I did not enjoy on the way home from work today was all the traffic driven by South By.
Because
South By happens to take place between my work and my home.
Yeah, so, it's like a gauntlet. It's like a gauntlet you have to overcome to get home.
It was terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Well, welcome to Austin, Josh.
Thank you.
Beautiful city. Travel safely home tomorrow.
Thank you.
See Maureen.
Thank you.
And your son. Glad to have you here, though. I thought we could just sit here and just talk for a few minutes about baseball.
Let's do it.
Because you are from our nation's capital.
I am, yes.
You're a fan of the Washington Nationals.
Big fan since they came in 2005.
Yeah, you grew up with Pete LaCleed.
Yes, I did.
My co-host on the show.
Yes.
Watching the Nationals.
Yeah, we went to the very first game ever in D.C. Well, the first game that the Nationals played in 2005.
I remember Pete telling me about you guys sitting in outfield seats and heckling.
Mm-hmm. Nigel Morgan.
That's right. Yeah, yep. Nigel Morgan, yeah.
Yep. Fun fact, though. Yeah, he was not a good center fielder. You know, the Nationals in the early days, maybe for the first 6-7 years, they were not good.
Right.
Actually, their first season, they were okay. They finished 500.
They were actually probably worse. Correct me if I'm wrong. Probably worse than an expansion team would have been.
I think so.
Because they weren't an expansion team. They were the Expos.
Right. They just got moved from Montreal.
To DC. Right.
So
they didn't get all the nice perks of an expansion team.
Right.
You know, being able to draft from existing teams and all that. No, they're just an existing franchise.
They had what they had.
You know, the reason the Expos moved is because they didn't have the fan base to support them in Montreal.
Right.
Most of the time, you don't have a fan base to support you. It's because, at least in part, you're not good.
Right.
So they just moved to DC and were sort of hapless. And they haven't been, I mean, they've been good recently, but they haven't had the postseason success
that
fans want.
Well, one of the benefits of having been so bad and so bad that they were the worst team in baseball for 2 years in a row is that they got two first round picks, first pick overall. And they got Steven Strasburg,
yep,
who's still on the team. And then they got Bryce Harper, who I think we'll talk a little bit about today.
Yeah, that's really the big topic I wanted to talk about.
That's the only thing Zach wants to talk about.
Not the only thing. I'm still a little bit divided on how I feel about this contract. I mean, I'm glad the Phillies got Harper. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
As a Phillies fan, I think adding a superstar like him, you know, I don't want to overstate this, but to a degree, I think the performance, whether or not he lives up to the hype he once had as a first overall pick, whether or not he lives up to that is kind of beside the point. It's really important to have a superstar persona of his of his caliber in your city.
Do you think maybe he has to live up more to being on the cover of ESPN when he was, Sports Illustrated when he was, you know, 16? Is that more of a barrier that he has to cross rather than being the first overall pick?
I think that,
you know, it said the chosen one, I think.
I almost think that, I was listening to a podcast earlier this week where the Nationals beat writer was talking, a Nationals beat writer, I think for the Post, I forget his name, but he was talking about this. His opinion, and I tend to agree with him, is that was Harper like 2 years ago.
Okay.
Harper had that breakout 2015, mm-hmm. and then he kind of regressed back to the mean in 2016, and I think that was the time when we were seeing Harper sort of wrestle with that and have that be sort of a psychological barrier.
Right.
And then there was the discussion about, you know, hey, did the Cubs break Harper when they walked him 4 times in a game and he sort of never was the same after that, et cetera. But then he showed signs of life last year, not being the best player in the league, maybe not even being the best player on the Nats. I mean, Anthony Rendon giving him a run for his money.
Yeah.
But I think we've seen Bryce mature in a way over the past 2 years that we hadn't seen before from him. I mean, we have to keep in mind these guys like Bryce enter the league with sky high expectations. Like you said, 16 years old on the cover of SI, the chosen one.
Mm-hmm.
He's drafted. He's playing at 19 years old, and people are expecting such big things from him. Well, now that's 7 years ago. You know, we're 7 years removed from that, and he's had an opportunity to play. I don't know how many games. I'll look it up. He's been able to play, I don't know, 1,000 games at the major league level, and he now I think is at a place where he's recognizing he's not Mike Trout, and he doesn't ever have to be Mike Trout, and that's perfectly okay. I think one of the things he wanted in you know, prioritizing with his agent Boris a deal that's long duration as well as high value is that he wants the security of being somewhere, so he doesn't always have to be playing for
the next contract
year, right?
I think to your point, I wanted to address something you said about the importance of getting that superstar in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I think people when they see these huge contracts, they underestimate the value that a player like that can bring to a franchise.
Yeah.
More, you know, he's going to sell tickets. He's going to sell jerseys. I mean, what was it? He set the record for a number of jerseys sold.
Yeah, sold in the 24 hours after the deal was announced.
That
was any sport, from what I understand, right?
That is going to pay dividends for the franchise going forward, and it's going to make them more profitable, and it's going to allow them to continue to build once he gets into his mid-30s and starts to decline physically, he's still going to be the face of their franchise. And I think that's what I will miss from him leaving the Nationals.
Yeah.
You know, his performance can be up and down and he'll help you win or he won't. But I think having a face of the franchise who you can put out in front of people and drive fans to the stadium, that is almost invaluable.
Yeah. So two things about this trade that I want to touch on a little bit. One is his much maligned defense. He's been criticized as a bad defensive player. Having watched him for the past 6 years as a National, do you think I should be concerned about that?
I think it's an interesting question. I think it's in two parts. I think at the beginning of his career, he was a little bit, he just did whatever he could. He was a little too, out there when he played. So defensively. So
he's kind of like the young quarterback who comes, Lamar Jackson, who comes in and he's like, oh, I'm going to step out of bounds, but then I'm going to step back in bounds and take on this linebacker. This
right. He thinks he can do more than he can.
Invincible. Yeah.
You know, 19 years old. It makes sense. But I think after he got hurt in Dodger Stadium early in his career by running into the wall.
Yeah.
I think that that sort of, he pumped the brakes a little bit.
He busted his shoulder, right?
Yeah. I think that whatever happened, someone sat him down, whether it was his dad or his agent, Scott Boras, and said, look, you've got to be more careful. You've got a long career ahead of you. So I think after that, he was a little more tame in his defense. And I think last year specifically, he realized that I'm in a contract year. I can't risk a big injury. So I'm not going to go all out in the outfield. I think he will be better than he has been. I don't think he's going to be, he's certainly not going to be an elite elite defensive right fielder, but he's also not going to be a liability for you.
Okay.
Rest easy, Zach.
That's good. That confirms my suspicions, which is that basically, you know, you look at a superstar player coming up in a contract year on a non-contending team, why would they play above average defense?
Now, that being said, I don't know how I feel as a fan about that.
Sure.
Because when he's costing you runs by not playing his heart out in the outfield.
Right.
And you know that it's probably because he would never say that, of course. And Scott Boras would never say it, but everybody kind of knows that might be it. It's tough to watch.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a subtle, even unconscious psychological element too there that if you know you're four runs down and you catching this shallow fly or not catching the shallow fly is the difference between one run.
Sure.
It's not really going to make a difference. Right.
So. Yeah. That's fair.
Okay. So that's good. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
The second thing that as a Phillies fan, I think you just need to sort of blink a little bit at least and hesitate is the length of this contract.
Yeah.
I mean, this is to my knowledge, the longest baseball contract ever signed.
I think with Giancarlo Stanton's, his was 13 years too.
Right. Yes.
Except his didn't have a no trade clause.
Right. So a little bit different. No one's been stuck with a player this long before.
That's true.
Now there are, existing payout agreements, for example, that are longer, but that does not involve the player playing for a certain amount of time. So like Bobby Bonilla day, right?
He's still getting money.
Still getting money, but he doesn't play for the Mets.
Right.
So I'm a little nervous about the length of this contract. This contract is so long, 13 years, that it will be old enough to have its own bar mitzvah by the end of the contract length. Should I be nervous about that?
I think that here's why you shouldn't be nervous. And one point we already touched on is that he will provide value even when he declines physically. He will provide value to the franchise.
Sure.
He will be in the Phillies Hall of Fame unless something goes catastrophically wrong. And I think the other thing you don't have to be concerned about is that the National League will have a DH in the next couple of years. I think it's almost almost inevitable at this point. And so when he can't play the outfield anymore and he doesn't want to play first base, because I assume that's where they will try to slot him after he finishes his outfield run.
Right.
I think he can play DH and he can be really effective there till late in his career.
Well, especially because he's a high on base guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably his biggest stat. You know, he's regardless of whether he's hitting or not, he's getting on base. He walks a lot. And if you've read or seen Moneyball, that's
what counts, right?
That's what counts. Getting on base doesn't matter how.
Not about home runs; it's about scoring runs.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, that also makes me feel better. I think that
on is the this back like a little therapy session for you?
A little bit, yeah.
Just to make sure that you feel okay.
I do feel okay. I think I would be less okay if it was 10-year, 330.
Okay.
Oddly enough, I actually feel better about it being 13, 330.
Yeah.
And I think part of that's because the average annual value is just lower that way, right? So instead of $33 million a year, if it was a 10-year deal, it's less than 30.
It allows them flexibility to add pieces later. Right. I mean, he's even said that already with regards to Mike Trout. I mean,
he's already trying to advertise for Mike Trout to come there.
He's saying, look, my salary per year is pretty low.
Right.
So, relatively.
Sure. But I think the other thing, too, is that with a contract this long, you know, it was 13 years ago that we were still sort of popping our eyes at the $250 million contract that Alex Rodriguez signed, right? And so 13 years from now, if revenues continue to climb the way they are, a 13,330 deal with a average annual value of, you know, $28 million is going to look really cheap. Right. We're like, wow, this is a bargain for this experienced DH that we have who can, you know, get on base at a 400 clip or whatever.
Right.
So I think it ultimately will play in the Phillies' favor. And even in the short term, if we're even though we are spending a lot of money, we're not spending an exorbitant amount of money on this guy.
Exactly.
The like I said, the average annual value is less than what San Diego paid for Machado.
Right.
Which to me is crazy. I thought that Harper was going to for sure get a higher AAV deal than Machado did.
I think it's
not the case.
I think it's clear that what he valued was
longevity.
Security and longevity.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think that's why he put in no trade clause. That's why he put no opt-outs. He didn't want to have to think about it. He doesn't have to think about what he's going to be doing for the next 13. I mean, he has to think about baseball, but he doesn't have to think about, am I going to get traded? Am I going to get moved? Like, what the deal? Am I going to get, you know, do I have to play for another contract? It's just nothing he has to think about. And that point to me is, I have to wonder, because he said this, and I don't know if he was just saying this because he felt like he needed to, but he said that he really wanted to try to make it work with the Nationals. Like, he wanted to be in one place.
Right, and I think he did.
I don't understand what happened. Maybe the Nationals just didn't want to commit for 13 years. And maybe all along we were looking at the price tag.
Right.
And we should have been looking at the length.
Yeah.
Because that's what he values.
I think that's possible. I also think the Nationals just didn't persistently try to keep him. You know, I think he would be foolish to not listen to other offers, sure. Right? And so when the Nationals came through with their offer in October, that was in the, was it $250 million range?
It was $300 for 10 years, range. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, that comes through in October, and he says, no, at least no, not yet.
Right.
And they're just like, okay, we're going to move on. And they were very intentional about
they did a lot of other things, yeah.
Yeah, so they sort of took themselves out of the running in that sense. I think it would have been a cool story. I mean, I've talked before about how much I mourn the loss of the franchise player. You know, we don't have the Derek Jeters anymore,
sure.
who stay in one place for their entire career. And as much as I hate to face Bryce Harper throughout the year as a Phillies fan, I would have liked to see him stay a National, just because you have a player who can build up his identity around a franchise and vice versa. And that's so cool. It doesn't happen anymore.
It just starts to make me think, like, as a human person, it's hard to pick your family up and move, you know, it's hard to, I don't think this decision was easy for him. And maybe it's just my personality, but I would want to stay somewhere where I knew I was welcomed. I mean, and not saying he's not going to be welcome in Philly. It's clear that he is.
For now, at least.
For now.
Philly fans can be pretty brutal. So hopefully sure. he doesn't get in their
once
bad
the season
side.
Starts. But, you know, it's a big decision to say, I'm going to move somewhere and that's where his life is going to be.
Yeah.
You know, it's been in DC, it's been in Vegas, but Philadelphia is going to be where he is known to be from.
Right.
That's a hard thing to do.
Oh yeah.
So it's hard for me to understand sometimes the human side of it. You know, for me, when you're talking about $275 million to $350 million, it's all the same. It's all just a lot of money.
Right.
So for me, I would value somewhere where I felt comfortable.
Security.
And loved. And that would be what I would. But it's clear that he thought he was going to get that in Philly. And he thinks he's going to get it. And that he feels like he just wanted the security and longevity. That's what he valued.
So if you were in Bryce Harper's shoes and you wanted to go somewhere, not necessarily irrespective of dollar signs,
sure.
but somewhere where you felt like you had a fan base that was going to love you and make you feel welcome and be a good supportive environment for your performance and for your family.
Right.
Where do you think you would go?
Well, I think that I would stay with the team that had brought me up.
Okay.
Wherever that was. Now, if it wasn't that, I would go somewhere that I felt like my family either lived or they wanted to live. So for me, I'm surprised he didn't go to the West Coast.
Yeah.
Just because
I thought he might go to the Dodgers. And then when the Giants came through late with an offer, I thought, oh, maybe that's it.
Yeah. So for me personally, I would either stay with what I knew if it made sense financially, if it was a lot less, obviously I probably wouldn't do that, but, or I would go somewhere where I knew I could be comfortable. And I guess that's what he felt like with Philly.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would probably tend towards a small market team.
Yeah.
You know, I think going to...
You would have gone the Machado route.
Yeah, perhaps.
San Diego.
I really like what he did there. I mean, he knows he's a big fish in a small pond,
yeah,
metaphorically. And
sure.
He gave an interview the other day and he acknowledged, hey, right now we're not even competing for the division title, maybe a wild card though. You know, so he knows that they're, you know, comparatively small market. I mean, San Diego is not the smallest market, but compared to your Los Angeles right up the road or your Boston's and New York's of the world, Atlanta's, I mean, those are all big market teams.
I think I would also want to go somewhere where I thought I could win, because if your job is to play a sport,
you want to win.
Then your job is to win.
And all these athletes are, they're type A guys who want to win.
I don't know.
And they've won at every level they've played at. Right. So they're used to
it. I don't know if Machado's ever going to win in San Diego. He might.
Yeah. That's a good point.
But he might not. I think Bryce Harper will likely win in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It might not be this year, but he will win at some point.
I think I would be hesitant to go to the Padres like Machado did, but I like the approach of going to a small market team. I was thinking more maybe like the Royals or the Brewers, you know, a team that has a more recent record of success and has a baseball front office that knows what it's doing and has shown that they know what they're doing.
Right.
And the Brewers, I mean, they have a roster that's nothing to scoff at right now.
Right.
And same with last year.
And have been competing.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, so I think going to a place like that could be a lot of fun for a player. The other alternative, though, is really the opposite of the spectrum, and that's a place that has a really long and storied history, like the Cardinals or the Red Sox.
Or the Yankees.
Like or the Yankees, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think where I would not want to go is a place where the front office was in apparent disarray or, you know, beginning the rebuild process like the Marlins right now,
right,
et cetera.
So, right, right.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But speaking of the Marlins, you want to talk a little bit about sort of power rankings in the NL East now that we have the big Bryce Harper contract in Philadelphia.
Everything seems to be set in the NL East. I think we can agree on who's going to finish last.
I think so. Yeah. That'll be the team that I just mentioned, the Derek Jeter led Miami Marlins.
Yeah. They've sold off all of their pieces. They've gotten a couple prospects in return, but
like Sixto Sanchez from the Phillies in return for Realmuto, the catcher.
I think that they have a long road.
So here's, let me read the FanGraphs NL East projected.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
It's very close.
So last year there were two teams in the National League East that finished above 500. That was the Braves, who had that really surprising campaign with the breakouts of the breakout of Ronald Acuña. Lots of fun to watch, and I think they'll be really fun again this year. But the Braves were at 556. They won 90 games. Nationals at 506, just over 500.
Just made it. They just made it.
They flirted with 500 all year. It was crazy. They'd be like two games up and then sink down to two games below, and they really just stayed in that zone all season. But they finished two games above.
It's almost worse as a fan when that happens
because
you stay invested for longer.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if your team's really bad, you can just sort of zone out at some point.
Totally agree. And then the Phillies finished just below. So they were the inverse. The Nationals were 82 and 80. The Phillies were 80, 82. And then the Mets, I mean, because complete disarray, 77-85 for a 475. So there are three teams below 500, two teams above. The Marlins were at 391. This year, the Marlins are projected by FanGraphs to actually be one game worse, 386. But then the Braves, Mets, Phillies, and Nats are all projected to be above 500 in that order. So Braves at 517, winning 84 games, Mets winning 84 games, the Phillies winning 86 games, and the Nationals winning 90 games. So that's the power ranking that the FanGraphs projections have. Nats, Phillies, Mets, Braves, and Marlins. Right off the bat here, I don't see how the Braves are behind the Mets.
No, I don't understand that either.
Okay.
I think that there will be some regression from the Braves.
Agreed, yes.
But I don't think it's going to be as severe as what this is projecting.
Right. I think The generous Mets projections are based on, you know, Noah Syndergaard, who they did not trade away. He's still on the roster. Jake DeGrom. So they have some really solid starting pitching.
I think if their pitching is good, they will be okay. And I think also, I don't, obviously the FanGraphs doesn't, the projection doesn't take this into account, but the eye test does.
Right.
Brody Van Wagenen, their new GM, has been very vocal as that they are going to be a contender. And I think that helps people who are looking at it from the outside say...
Different mindset, right?
They might be a contender.
Yeah, sure. On Robinson Cano as well, right?
Yep.
He is the one of the newest Mets. And so I think, you know, adding a power-hitting second baseman, one of the best power-hitting second basemen of the modern era to the roster, I think certainly helps to bolster that team in a position where they were not so strong last year. So they've got some good talent. I'm not thinking that they're going to be horrible. But when you compare that to the really promising Braves talent on the other side. I just don't think that the Mets are going to be better. And the Braves have Freddie Freeman, who had a little bit of a down year last year, but perennially one of the best hitters in the game today. I mentioned Ronald Acuna already. Dansby Swanson is finally, I think, kind of figuring out this game. He took a little bit of adjustment period coming into the majors from the minor leagues, but he's done well. And I just expect big things from this Braves squad.
Oh, don't forget about their big free agent acquisition, Josh Donaldson.
Oh, yeah.
One year, $23 million.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he can do there. I can't decide if he's past his prime or if he just needs to get healthy and then he'll be back.
I think, well, clearly he's betting on getting healthy. He didn't wait around he didn't wait around for a long-term contract. He said, I'll sign this one-year deal and try it again next year.
Oh, and Ozzie Albies. I didn't even mention Albies. So I think that the Braves just have more talent. And I think, you know, with the maybe the Donaldson thing aside, they have younger talent. And that's kind of what matters. Now, I think the Mets have a pitching edge on that. But the problem with the Mets pitching staff historically
has been injury.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, the projections right now sitting at this point in spring training are rosy for the Mets. But I think that could change very quickly.
And don't forget about Tim Tebow.
Of course.
He's waiting on the fringes.
He was sent back to minor league camp.
I know, though, but he's going to start at AAA this year.
It's true.
So it's true. I think he might come up in September at least.
You know, I almost flew out to Vegas to watch him in the AA.
Oh, that's right.
He was playing. He was in town to play the Vegas 51s, and I almost flew out just for fun, so Pete and I could go to a game there and watch him live. So at the top of the National League East, according to the FanGraphs projections, we have Washington and Philadelphia. Do you think Washington's going to win the NL East like FanGraphs does?
No, I don't.
Why not?
I think that they are. FanGraphs is based on past work, past body of work. They had a career year last year from Patrick Corbin, the Nationals' new huge free agent signing from the Diamondbacks. He might have some regression. They're betting on another good year from Anibal Sanchez, their other new pitching acquisition from the Braves. He's an older pitcher. There's no way that those two are going to be as good. And Corbin might, but there's no way Sanchez is. So there's some starting pitching issues with the Nationals. They've lost Bryce Harper, we've talked about. Now, I don't think their outfield was diminished that much because they're going to bring up Victor Robles, who's their stud center fielder. So we'll see how he does. You know, based on the spring training news I've been following about the Nationals, he's had a little trouble defensively. He's lost a couple balls in the sun. It's just sort of that rookie mentality.
Yeah, I think that's all sort of growing pains. Right. I wouldn't worry about
that. But I think that he will be a boost to their offense for sure. He's totally a power hitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think Adam Eaton's obviously back off the
hopefully ACL. Fully healthy.
Yep. Right.
And then Juan Soto.
I think a lot of it might come down to, you know, Steven Strasburg. Can he stay healthy? Yep. Well, on paper, I do think the Nats actually have the best squad in the East. I tend to agree with the FanGraphs projections. I know you're probably less inclined to hope that and then be disappointed as a fan, but when I look at this depth chart in the outfield, Juan Soto, who's incredible, right up there with Ronald Acuna, and Vlad Guerrero Jr. is one of the bright young stars in the game.
Except he will also probably have some regression.
Sure.
And he hit almost 300 last year with a 400 on-base percentage and a 500 slugging. I mean, that's incredible. He's going to come down a little bit from that.
But even if you come down a little bit from that, I mean, you're still a great player.
That's true.
So Juan Soto, you already mentioned Victor Robles, and then Adam Eaton. That's the outfield.
Yeah.
And then you added Brian Dozier in the infield.
Second base.
So you've got Ryan Zimmerman, who's definitely past his prime, but at least a good veteran leader and still good for, I don't know, 20 home runs this year?
Yeah. If he stays healthy, he can play decent first base.
Yeah.
And he's a good enough hitter.
And then he was really good 2 years ago. It was his best year ever statistically.
Exactly.
He kind of fell off last year. But you know, I think he's still got some juice in him.
Yeah.
And then Brian Dozier, Trey Turner, huge Trey Turner fan, always a stolen base threat.
Yep.
And then Rendon.
Yep.
And then Gomez catching. And then the rotation, Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, and Anibal Sanchez. I mean, come on.
You know, they've got four who can pitch. They've got a fifth. They brought back Jeremy Hellickson, who was their fifth last year.
An old Philly,
He's a five inning guy. They pull him after five innings, really, really two times through the rotation. He's asked for a longer leash this year.
Yeah.
I think he earned it, but we'll see. They don't really have a lot of starting pitching depth though.
Right.
So if one of those guys gets hurt, you know, you mentioned Strasburg, he's not been able to stay healthy. They don't have a lot in the wings. Yeah, waiting.
It's bullpen stuff.
So what about Philly?
So I mean, I think Philly has some promise.
Andrew McCutchen
here. Yeah. So they picked up McCutchen.
Good pickup.
I would say kind of in the Zimmerman category there.
Yeah.
Like lots of promise, really good veteran leader. You want him in the yeah. clubhouse to mentor younger guys. Still good for yep. some decent offensive production, but tailing off and definitely on the back half of the career. Yep. Odubel Herrera is a really frustrating player because he is sometimes brilliant and sometimes just like,
right.
what are you doing?
Yep.
Are you a major league player? and then of course, Harper in right field. So that's our outfield. And then third base, Michael Franco, it's kind of in the same mold as Odubel Herrera. Sometimes one of the best looking offensive third basemen in the game. And yep. sometimes just, again, what are you doing? Gene Segura and Scott Kingery in the middle of the infield. Also Cesar Hernandez. So I think our middle infield is pretty solid. We picked up Segura.
Yeah, were you happy with that trade?
Yeah, you know, off the top of my head, I don't remember what we gave up for yeah. Segura. But I'm happy to have him added to the team. Yeah. I think one of the obvious approaches of Matt Klentak, the GM for Philly in this approach, is adding veteran depth.
Yeah.
You know, just adding guys who can mentor the young guys. You know, adding your McCutcheons who can mentor mm-hmm. your Herreras and your Seguras who can mentor your Kingeries. You
yeah.
know? And I think that, at least I hope, that approach will pay off.
Yeah, I don't think that should be undervalued.
Right. And Hoskins on first base. And yeah. then Real Muto, I think, is one of the best pickups of the yeah. offseason. And I think he'll do a lot.
A little bit about it. I mean, you seemed a little hesitant.
I've come around. Yeah. When we texted it before, I thought we had given up too much because yeah. I was a Sixto Sanchez fan.
Yeah.
I think in the aftermath of the Harper trade, like the Real Muto thing is
making
more sense to me now.
You know, the idea of holding on to prospects for so long, and then they, you know, they might never pan out.
Right.
The Nationals famously traded away two huge pitching prospects a couple of years ago, Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo
Gonzalez, right?
Ronaldo Lopez.
Okay.
To the Chicago White Sox
yeah.
for Adam Eaton. Neither of those pitchers have panned out for the White Sox.
Right.
And Adam Eaton, you know, he's been hurt, but he's been successful when he's played with the Nationals. So,
right.
you know, I think holding on to prospects forever is never going to be the best situation. So I think, especially with Philly in a place where they can win now, to get yeah. a catcher that can really provide value is huge.
I think the big question is, and it seems like this is the question with almost every team,
the rotation
pitching. Yeah. yeah. So how's that going to be? I mean, Nola is amazing.
Sure.
But then we have Arrieta, and which version of Arrieta are we getting? I mean, yeah. he's good, but he's, you know, he had that career year, three, four years ago.
Yeah. I think he'll be better this year.
I think so too.
I think part of the problem last year was that he signed so late. He missed part of spring right. training. And I think that despite what pitchers will tell you, that is a big thing for them to get ready.
I think it matters a lot more for pitchers than it yeah. does for hitters.
Yep, I agree. So I think that he will come around this year more so than he was last year.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then Nick Pivetta and Zach Eflin and Vince Velasquez, like all of those guys are pretty high upside guys,
yeah.
but also pretty low downside guys.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
there's just so much variability with the rotation
yeah.
in Philly. And I'm not sure. I think on paper, I do like the Nationals roster. And, you know, hopefully this doesn't bode poorly for Philly, but I think, and from what I've been reading from the Nats beat writers, the clubhouse climate in Washington is so good.
It's good, yeah. I think the players rallied behind Davey Martinez last year after he was a little poo-pooed by the fan base. They said,
right.
We don't really know if you know what you're doing, and
right.
and I think they've stuck with him. So I think that's helpful for him to have more confidence. And it sounds like he's gone back to the basics in spring training, which they needed. They had a lot of base running mistakes and fielding mistakes last year that are easily cleaned up.
So are we agree then? Nats, Phillies.
You might have brought me around. You're right.
Nats, Phillies, Mets.
Yeah.
Or Nats, Phillies, Braves, Mets Marlins.
Marlins. Yeah. yeah. Okay.
okay.
And I think I would welcome another three-prong NL East Cy Young race. That was pretty exciting.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Last year.
Yeah.
With Nola, Scherzer, and... And DeGrom.
So, yeah, that would be fun.
And then you throw in Syndergaard and Corbin.
Right.
You never know. So it could be cool.
Yeah. And I'm Arrieta. Maybe Arrieta's back. You know?
Maybe you never know.
We'll see the, six best pitchers in the National League, all in the National League.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Who knows? It could happen. Anything else we should talk about, Josh?
I think that's all. I'm excited for baseball season now.
No, me too. It's right around the corner.
Less than two weeks away.
Did you get your MLB.TV subscription?
I haven't yet, but I'm ready. I'm ready to purchase that and watch all my Nats games.
Pretty awesome. I was talking with Pete the other day. He's got it. I'm
ready.
We tried calling him to our listeners. We tried giving Pete a cold call, having him on the podcast, but he didn't answer. So
yeah, he was doing that thing called life.
Oh, lame. Josh, remind our listeners how to listen to the podcast with you and Maureen.
You can listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Just search the Popcast and reach out to us if you want. We'd be happy to hear from you.
Awesome. Cool.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us, Josh. Hopefully you had fun at South by Southwest.
I did.
Have a safe trip back to DC.
Thanks so much.
Enjoy watching the Nats this year.
All right, go Nats.
All right, to our listeners, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next time on The Lineup.